Hello and welcome. We're just going to wait a few minutes to allow the room to fill with all of our attendees. Hello, it's nice to quote unquote see everyone today. Thank you for joining us. Hello, everyone. We're just going to wait another minute or two to let any last attendees make their way into the room. We still have a number of people joining our virtual space, so I'm just going to give it one more minute before we officially begin the webinar. Thank you so much for spending time with us this afternoon or morning, based on which coast you're on. All right, we are going to get started. So, welcome to today's webinar for our newly released call for proposals, identifying the next phase of leadership and management for the RWJF Culture of Health Prize. Next slide. My name is Katie Mears, and I am a program associate at the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. I'm joined by a number of my colleagues this morning/afternoon. In alphabetical order, we have Tim Crowley, a senior grants management specialist, Helen Matthew, a grants management coordinator, Chris Fares, our program financial analyst, and Katie Weir, a senior program officer. Katie and I will be presenting today, and Tim, Helen, and Chris are available with us to answer questions as they lead the grants management and financial review, respectively, on this call for proposals. And we want to sincerely thank you for joining us today, as we are excited to talk with all of you about this call for proposals. Next slide. So before we begin, a few logistics. I'd like to remind all attendees that your audio is muted. If you experience technical difficulties, you can contact Ring Central for support at 1-800-595-8110. If you're joining us by phone or wanting the materials as reference, this webinar is being recorded, so you'll be able to replay it and see the visuals at a later time. A link will also be posted to the resource section of myrwjf.org, and a copy of the slides will also be available. We have time set aside at the end of this presentation to address questions you may have. So So please note that we can't take questions verbally, so we invite you to post your questions through the question and answer tab at the bottom of your screen. Please also keep in mind that questions should be general and not specific to your planned proposal. And we'll update the frequently asked questions or FAQ section of the resources page based on today's discussion. Next slide. So for those of you who aren't familiar with the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, for more than 45 years, the foundation has worked to improve health and healthcare, both nationally and in our home state of New Jersey. Since 2015, we've been working alongside others to build a national culture of health that provides everyone the chance to be as healthy as possible. A culture of health recognizes that where we live, such as access to affordable houses, high quality schools, good jobs, and reliable transportation all affect how long and how well we live. And improving health and well-being requires collective efforts to create the conditions to ensure all residents have a fair and just opportunity for health. The coronavirus pandemic, recent police violence, and growing inequity across the nation underscore the importance of community conditions and collective efforts for all residents to have a fair and just opportunity for health. Next slide. So before we go further, we'd like to recognize the importance of this date, June 19th. Known as Juneteenth or other names such as Freedom Day, today is a holiday that celebrates the ending of slavery in the U.S. and celebrates African American history and resistance. On June 19, 1865, almost 2.5 years after President Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation ended slavery in the Confederacy, and nearly 6 months after the 13th Amendment was passed by Congress, officially abolishing the institution of slavery for the nation, Union General Gordon Granger read federal orders in Galveston, Texas, that all previously enslaved people in Texas were free. It is also the day that the Senate passed the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which once signed into law in early July, ended segregation in public places, including schools, unequal application of voting requirements, and employment discrimination based on race, color, religion, sex, or national origin. Civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr. is said to have called it the second emancipation. We recognize these moments in history and continued efforts to make this country live up to its ideals of freedom and justice for all, and to make Black lives matter. It is also in this context that we recognize the promise of a culture of health vision, what it means to center equity in that vision, and how the prize is intended to further that vision. Next slide. So here's what we're going to do and spend our time together today. And I'm going to now turn it over to my colleague, Katie Weir, Senior Program Officer at the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, to continue the presentation. Katie?
Thank you, Katie. And thank you all for joining us today. It's a delight to be with you. And if you could go to the next slide, please. As we at the Foundation work to build a culture of health with partners across the country, the RWJF Culture of Health Prize, or the prize, is one way that we at RWJF lift up examples of communities working at the forefront of advancing health, opportunity, and equity. We recognize a culture of health is happening in different ways and in different places in cities, counties, tribes, regions, and rural towns. And that each of these places has a variety of physical, economic, and social strengths and challenges. Though each place's journey looks different, prize-winning communities show us what a culture of health can look like. You can see that diversity in this map, where 44 communities have now been designated as prize winners. The prize-winning communities span 26 states, including 5 Native nations, recognized as winners. Tribal nations are also part of other winning communities, such as Klamath County. And thank you all for letting me know that the microphone is low. I will continue to adjust it, so hopefully you all can hear better. to the next slide, please. We wanted to pull forward some of the important characteristics of the prize. As a national recognition prize, the prize honors work that communities have already accomplished to address community conditions that enable health, equity, and opportunity, and demonstrates what it takes to make lasting change. The prize honors whole communities, that is, geographically defined jurisdictions from across the country, not single individuals, organizations, neighborhoods, or initiatives. RWJF awards prize funds to its designated entity on behalf of the winning community. By honoring prize-winning communities and elevating their stories with national and local media and with other influential audiences, the prize seeks to showcase what is possible, inspire others to apply the principles exemplified in the current criteria, and contribute to a broader narrative about and demand for how we as a nation can create a culture of health for all. To the next slide. After 7 years of awarding the annual prize, we at the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation reflected on the strength of the program and wanted to increase its reach, visibility, and influence in line with our culture of health vision and commitment to health equity. Given our commitment to fairness, we are opening up the opportunity for leadership across our grant-funded programs, including longstanding programs. In that spirit, RWJF has decided to recompete the leadership and management of the RWJF Culture of Health Prize in its entirety, where the new phase will begin with informing the 2021 prize winner celebration and planning for the 2022 prize cohort. Our decision in no way reflects concerns about the performance of the current program lead, the University of Wisconsin Population Health Institute. This decision strictly reflects RWJF's commitment to recompeting longstanding programs. The call for proposal provides background on the RWJF Culture of Health Prize and outlines responsibilities for an organization selected to take on the next phase of leadership and management. And I will continue to adjust my microphone, so apologies for that. This request seeks an entity to reimagine, lead, and manage the next 2-year phase of the leadership and management of the National RWJF Culture of Health Prize. We seek applicants to propose approaches to the selection, strategic communications, celebration, and learning activities in ways that advance the prize's reach, influence, visibility, and the foundation's commitment to health equity. This includes the prize's ability to increase awareness about the role of community conditions on health, equity, and well-being, to offer new and alternative strategies for creating healthier, more equitable communities, and to build demand for what's possible. To the next slide. The applicant selected through this call for proposals will have the following responsibilities. 1, program, vision, strategy, and implementation. In consultation with us at the foundation, the new lead will set a vision and direction for the National Prize Program. This vision and direction includes, but isn't limited to, determining any changes needed to existing criteria, redesigning the selection process, and reimagining ways to elevate, celebrate, and learn with new and past winners. And in that spirit of learning, I'll continue to figure out what's going on with the microphone, so apologies. The second is related to prize program relationships. This includes working with the foundation and, as needed, our contracted communications firms and evaluation firms to develop working relationships in ways that facilitate collaboration. This also includes working with the University of Wisconsin as needed to develop working relationships for transitioning operations and relationships with past winners from the 2013 to 2021 cohorts. Third is the selection process. This responsibility includes designing and implementing a refined selection process for annual winners in 2022 and 2023, and to begin to plan for the 2024 cohort. The Robert Wood Johnson Foundation will make the final decision on winners resulting from the process or any recommendations from a prize advisory group. The foundation will directly make the prize awards to communities. The fourth is celebration and learning activities with new winners and alumni, including strategic communications. This responsibility includes designing and implementing opportunities for celebrating and learning with prize winners across all cohorts of winning communities and fostering connections that bridge across leadership phases of the program. This responsibility also includes designing and implementing strategic communications efforts in consultation with the foundation to increase relevance, influence, and reach of the National Prize Program. And fifth is the ongoing project management and quality improvement. This responsibility includes drawing on existing lessons learned and assessment findings, as well as developing and implementing, in consultation with the foundation, ongoing quality improvement efforts to increase the efficiency and effectiveness of the program. As part of these responsibilities, the selected entity would be expected to have the capacity to coordinate and facilitate logistics and reimburse stipends, honoraria, meals, and other travel expenses. This capacity may include coordinating with the foundation's foundation services or our contracted vendors related to meetings and travel. More details are provided in the call for proposals itself. To the next slide. Through this selection process, the foundation will select one entity to receive a contract of up to $4 million starting February 1st in 2021 and ending December 15th, 2023 for the responsibilities we just described. This includes providing leadership and management of the prize for the 2022 and 2023 cohorts. The selected lead entity is expected to have designated milestones that would determine success of planning and demonstrated readiness and capacity to take on implementation. Milestones will also help the foundation determine renewal of this contract for cohorts for 2024 and beyond. Again, more details have been provided in the call for proposals. A couple of things we wanted to also note related to this award. If you can go to the next slide, please. There will be separate but complementary funds also part of this program. We at the foundation will award directly prizes to each prize cohort, 2022 and 2023, and we will provide separate funds to contracted communication firms to support strategic communication efforts and to contracted evaluation firms to support external evaluations. These funds are intended to complement the capacities of the lead selected through this call for proposals. And to help you understand the use of funds, as you've seen in the call for proposals on this next slide, funds can be used for project and staff salaries, consultant fees, data collection analysis, meetings, supplies, project-related travel, and other direct project expenses, including a limited amount of equipment. And in keeping with our policy, funds may not be used to support clinical trials of unapproved drugs or devices, to construct or renovate facilities, for lobbying, for political activities, or as a substitute for funds currently being used to support similar activities. And a quick note on budgeting. As you consider your budget, while we are seeking the most qualified applicant to complete this work, competitiveness and rate structure also will be taken into consideration. To be able to accurately compare various bids, we ask that you supply billable rates for the various staff members included in your proposal, and we will not accept fixed price contract proposals. As you're considering applying, keep in mind the eligibility criteria. Applicants must be public entities, nonprofit organizations that are tax exempt under Section 501c3 of the Internal Revenue Code, or for-profit organizations. Applicant organizations must be based in the United States or its territory. Now we'll cover a little bit of the selection criteria. Applicants will be selected based on the qualities outlined in the selection criteria section of the call for proposals, including one, the commitment to equity, diversity, and inclusion, and evidence that this is displayed in the application in the proposed approach. This is in line with the foundation's commitment to building a culture of health that provides everyone in America a fair and just opportunity for health and well-being. Achieving this goal requires an intentional focus on equity, diversity, and inclusion. The second is creativity and approach and an ability to balance both vision with implementation. The third is around understanding the multiple and structural determinants of health inequity, as well as community-led strategies for social change. And the fourth is experience with implement strategies, strategic communications, campaigns, and our prize philanthropy. And to continue on to the next slide, the fifth is experience working with communities and with tasks related to the roles and responsibilities outlined in the section, Overview of Lead Entities' Responsibilities. The sixth is capacity for implementation, such as running a selection process, planning and producing events, and having relevant financial systems needed to process reimbursements. And the seventh is the appropriateness of the budget vis-a-vis the project activities. So a couple of things to pull to the fore, but there are several important qualities that these selection criteria highlight. These include a commitment to improving health inequity, a clear track record of successful engagement with diverse constituencies, understanding and experience with influence strategies, strategic communications, campaigns, enterprise philanthropy as mechanisms for creating social change, complex project management expertise, as well as experience working collaboratively in a complex program, and experience running competitive selection processes and providing logistical support for these processes. And a few other qualities to note. This includes a willingness to tolerate ambiguity and to adjust processes and activities as learning occurs. It also includes a willingness to bring experience and new thinking to bear and provide guidance based on those experiences, while also recognizing that this national prize is and will continue to be branded in a way that ties directly to RWJF's vision. And last but certainly not least is the commitment to budgeting and managing funds in a manner that reflects responsible stewardship of resources. So a couple of key important dates to highlight. The deadline for receipt of the full proposals is July 31st, 2020 at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Finalists who are selected will participate in a virtual discussion in early October and will be notified at least 2 weeks in advance with additional details and materials, and that the contract will start on February 1st of 2021. And also to keep in mind, if we go to the next slide, is that the selected entity may be invited to join prize celebration and learning events in advance of their contract start date as a way to understand the program's efforts to date. Now to talk a little bit about the application process. Proposals for this funding opportunity must be submitted through our online system, my.rwjf.org. And if you visit www.rwjf.org/CFP/prize-lead and use the apply online link. That's how you can get to the online system. For new applicants, please note that you will be required to register before you can begin the application process, and please familiarize yourself with the detailed instructions and formatting requirements displayed in the online application and not wait until the last minute to submit in the event you have questions or trouble submitting. Note that the foundation will not accept those proposals that are completed or submitted after the deadline. We also do not provide individual critiques of proposals, and given the online system, please be sure to save your work frequently. In the proposal, we're going to ask you for a few different elements. If you could go to the next slide, please. The requested elements of the proposal include descriptions of your experience and lessons learned that you would apply to this opportunity, evidence of commitment to diversity, equity, and inclusion, and understanding of the multiple and structural determinants of health and of community-led strategies for social change, creativity and intentionality and approach to the responsibilities named in the CFP, the call for proposals, including your ideas, the timeline, the milestones, and the mitigation strategies that you are considering. And again, your proposed budget. So please reference the call for proposals and my.rwjf.org for detailed instructions and required application elements. So with that, I think we're ready to move to Q&A time, question and answer time. And again, thank you so much for your patience with our sound. Katie, let me turn it back to you to help lead us into the questions and answers.
Great, thank you, Katie. And again, apologies for any issues that may have been making it difficult to hear. And thank you all for the private and public suggestions on what we might do to improve. So I appreciate all of the suggestions of what we might provide in the beginning to help people hear more easily. So thank you for all of that. So we've actually been receiving a number of questions, and I just want to give folks a minute in case you haven't had the opportunity. If you take your mouse and sort of softly sweep over the bottom, there should be a box that says Q&A box, and that is the place where you can submit your questions. Please remember that questions should be general and not project specific, as we will not be giving feedback on individual ideas. And given how many people are joining us for the webinar today, we're going to answer as many questions as we can live. But if there are any unanswered questions from this webinar, we will include them in our updated frequently asked questions, FAQ document that will be posted to the CFP landing page, as well as in the application and review section of MyRWJF. And we will also continue to update these frequently asked questions until 1 week prior to the application deadline. And as we've mentioned previously, there will be a recording of this webinar and a copy of the slides within those resource sections. So without further ado, I'd like to start with a question of from one attendee. Thank you so much. So what piece or pieces of the strategic communications are owned by the lead entity versus the contracted communications firm?
That is a conversation that, should you be selected as a lead entity, or probably even in the context of the conversations with a finalist, that we would want to be in conversation about as you think about the capacities that you have and the capacities that you would need complemented in order to achieve the strategic communications goals that you outline.
Thank you so much, Amy. Will separate CFPs for the communication and evaluation work streams be issued by RWJF or by the lead entity? And if so, when will those CFPs be issued?
They will be separate issues, and they will be managed by our communications and research evaluation and learning units. And those will be determined based off of the timeline of the program. So at this stage, I don't have exact dates. I know that they will be issued in the future.
Great. The next question is, will the selected entity have a public-facing role, or is it mostly behind-the-scenes management?
It is anticipated that it would be a public-facing role and that it would be something managed collectively with the foundation in addition to the behind-the-scenes role that the management might require for the program.
My apologies. One second. So just to reiterate, there's quite a few questions. This is being recorded, and we will get the slide deck as well as this recording out on the CFP landing page as well as my.rwjf.org. So the next question is from Lorne. Does the foundation have a well-defined decision-making process for the Culture of Health Prize, or is it looking for or open to assessing and potentially redesigning the decision-making processes?
We are looking, as part of the responsibility of the new lead entity, to identify what those decisions need to be and the decision-making process to help support it. While there are some decisions within the foundation in terms of how we bring, for instance, our senior leadership along in the decisions around prize winners, given that we will make final decisions on those winning communities, that is not a process that is expected of the new lead. That would be a responsibility of myself and Katie and others that are part of the program staff, but rather we would need the new lead's assistance in both identifying what are the decisions that need to be made and the correct process or the processes that would need to be to support those decisions as the program continues to evolve.
So, Katie, this next question is around a community as a single jurisdiction. So it might be helpful to talk a little bit about the purpose of this versus the Culture of Health Prize. So the question is a community a single jurisdiction, or can a state or group of states be the focus of the application?
Community is the single jurisdiction, so this would be smaller than a state. And I think there was another question about, is there a size of community that's too small? And the answer is no, not too small. And I would just emphasize the geographic boundaries or geographic jurisdiction as we understand community. So it goes beyond a single organization or a single project is the intent of awarding prizes to community.
Great. The next part, the only addition that I would have is that this is for the management of the selection of communities, not for the actual Culture of Health Prize, which is a coming later in the year. So Katie, the next question is around partnership. So can two or more institutions partner to provide the required management and services?
Multiple organizations can partner, but there needs to be one lead entity.
So there is some interest in learning a little bit more about the current structure, and understanding how the prize is currently run and making any of that information available.
So the appendix of the call for proposals highlights the components of the prize, which does highlight some of the structure currently, including our work with the University of Wisconsin Population Health Institute.
Great. The next question is, how much travel do we anticipate will be required for the awarded agency?
That is a question that we're looking for you to answer based off of how you design the program, for what it means for a selection process, and what it means for a recommendation process if you, for instance, decided to include advisors, and what it would mean for how you would want to support communities in the celebration and learning activity, or other components that you might be considering as part of your vision.
Excellent. So this next question is around understand that there are separate funds for communication and evaluation firms. Will the selected entity be involved in identifying those firms, or are these existing organizations that RWJF contracts for these functions?
For both types of firms, both communications and evaluations, it is a combination of both being in conversation with us about new firms potentially to select as a way to complement the design and capacities that you all put forward as a lead entity. There are some firms that we work with on a regular basis and that currently have a relationship with the foundation. So they may also be involved moving forward.
So the next question, and there's a few here, so I might bundle these a little bit, but in regards to budget guidelines, there's a section about budget allocation, and is it right that we only need to provide a percentage breakdown of the budget by a major element, not the dollar breakdown by major element? Need to provide a percentage breakdown of the budget by major element, not a dollar breakdown by major element.
Thank you, Kim. Thank you, Katie. This is Chris Ferris. Yes, that is correct, that at that part of the budget narrative, which is, I believe, at the very bottom of page 4, we are asking for you to give us the percentage of the budget that is allocated to the major activities of the project. I think it lists activity 1, 2, 3, possibly 4. You can add more, and it would be really great if you identified the activity along with providing the percentage of the budget that is going towards the activity itself.
Great. And I'm wondering, Chris, if I could follow up with another budget question. For the personnel section of the budget narrative, the instructions suggest providing either a daily or hourly rate. Is there a preference on these formats or both? And should the table of personnel rates include total costs per person for the whole grant or for the year?
Actually, we would accept either hourly or daily rates as long as you're providing us with the number of days or the number of hours that each individual will be working on the activity that they have been designated, or their role, the activity that ties to their role. And yes, what we would do is that calculation, which you could provide within your budget narrative, would then be used and would tie to the budget spreadsheet that you would also be presenting. And since this grant is going to be around 30, I believe it's 35, or contract is going to be about 35 months in duration, we would ask you that you provide 3 12-month budget periods, or, well, it's really 2 12-month budget periods and I believe 1 11-month budget period, which we would need the totals for all the staff by those periods. Was that clear, Katie? Please have me reiterate if that did not come off as clear as I had hoped.
Not at all, Chris. And certainly we will follow up with written guidance on all of this within both the application and within the call for proposals and the frequently asked questions document. So if that was unclear to you, please reference the frequently asked questions and hopefully that will provide a clearer response. How does that sound?
Thank you, Katie.
Great. So Katie, I think this next one goes to you because it's around eligibility. And so would a national 501c3 nonprofit that provides services in multiple jurisdictions be eligible to apply?
National nonprofits are eligible. And I would just reference back to the responsibilities outlined in the call for proposals, as the project is for the prize is not about providing direct services to communities.
Great. So there are a number of questions around understanding if this is one award or a group of awards that are going out to multiple entities. Katie, I'm wondering if you could just touch on that. So when you talk about partnership, does that mean that multiple entities might be funded? Or is this a single award?
This is a single contract to lead and manage the Culture of Health Prize. There may be subcontracts that you've identified for your partners in order to be able to fulfill the responsibilities outlined in the call for proposals. What is not expected in your budget is the actual dollar amounts that go to prize to communities who win a prize. RWJF will award those prizes to communities separately based on the result of the selection process that the new lead entity runs. The new lead entity is expected to have in their planning and approach a vision related to strategic communications, and that vision also includes the capacity needed to implement that vision. There may be ways in which you identify capacities that are needed to complement, which is where separate funds RWJF would provide to communications firms. And in the context of the evaluation firms, RWJF evaluates its programs as a way to understand progress along a theory of change. It is not intended to be about attribution, more about contribution, and it is not intended to be a quality assurance function, more an impact function. And so third-party entities assist us, the foundation, in those evaluations, recognizing the importance of those evaluators working collaboratively with the lead entity be able to design the evaluation appropriately or to have appropriate insight on the evaluation. So I raise that both because of the expectation that the lead entity would have a quality improvement function, but in terms of an impact evaluation, those impact evaluations would be funded separately through a third party.
Great. Our next question is around learning activities. So is the lead entity responsible for creating and carrying out the learning activities, or is there a pre-developed curriculum that is followed?
The lead entity is responsible for developing the learning activities with the idea that prize winners, both new cohorts and past cohorts, can both learn from one another as well as help others learn from them and the work that they're doing. And there is no set curricula. Rather, we are looking to the new lead entity to design what those learning activities need to look like.
The next question is around replication. And so the question is the goal to build a management process or model that can be replicated within communities?
The goal is not to develop a replicable model for management within communities. Rather, the purpose of this call for proposals is to select an entity to fulfill the leadership and management responsibilities that are outlined in the call for proposals.
Great. The next question is around intellectual property. So within our submitted proposals with the submission ideas for redesign and amplifying impact, are those ideas considered property of RWJF after we submit, after the application is submitted, even if they are not selected as an awardee?
So what you submit as an application, even if you are not awarded, is not considered RWJF's property, intellectual property. In other words, we will not take ideas that aren't funded and implement them without consultation or in a way where it would feel as though we took your submission idea and ran with it on our own or with another entity.
So, Katie, there are some questions about sharing information about last year's, or in this case, the entity that is currently running the Culture of Health Prize. And I just want to reiterate Katie's previous answer, is that there is an appendix section of the call for proposals that contains the current elements of the management. And that is our example of what is currently being done, and there is a request, Katie, to supply an example of what the foundation is seeking.
Katie, is there something more specific about what we are seeking?
Correct. That is the question that the attendee has posed. Is there anything that we are currently exploring or looking to?
This is the beauty for this call for proposals, is that there is not one model that we are looking for. Rather, we are looking for your ideas about how best to design a prize that honors whole communities, and a recognition prize, meaning a prize that recognizes efforts that communities have already accomplished, and in ways that help to increase the reach, the visibility, and the influence of the prize as a way to continue to drive forward RWJF's culture of health vision, that all may have a fair and just opportunity for health. So I don't have something more specific in the sense that we don't have a model of where we think this needs to go. We have certainly learned through this prize process. We've paid attention to other prizes, community-based prizes, for the way that they have organized or managed themselves or their selection criteria. And we are not bound by any one of those models.
Thank you, Katie. So this next question is around notable challenges that we've experienced. So are there any notable challenges with the Culture of Health Prize that you're hoping the lead entity can help you solve in future iterations of the program?
That's a good one to keep me on my toes. So as I think about notable challenges, I would name it in a couple ways. I think one is, what does it mean to create influence of a prize program, an annual prize program? So there are new prizes every year in ways that continue to engage past winners and continue to build momentum forward in a way that's meaningful, not only to communities, but also to the nation. And I would name this as a creative tension point, not as a challenge in a way that is a reflection at all around the current program or the current leadership of the program. And the second challenge I would name is how to have a prize that centers equity. Again, a reflection of the creative tension of a program and not a reflection of the current program nor the leadership of the program, but ways in which prizes can contribute to demonstrating what's possible in a way that feels concrete and in a way that honors a whole community and lifts up alternative visions and voices of residents who are often most directly affected by the challenges. And so I think it is in this context that this moment that we all find ourselves in is how to continue to utilize a prize as a way to continue to center equity in the conversation.
Great. Thank you. I'm going to bundle this next question. So is an institution of higher education eligible to apply? And can the current lead entity have the opportunity to, or does the current lead entity have the opportunity to reapply?
The current lead entity does have the opportunity to apply. And as we indicated in the selection criteria, and the eligibility criteria for the applicants can be public entities, nonprofit organizations, or for-profit organizations. So if your higher education institution fits one of those categories, then it is eligible to apply.
Katie, can you talk a little bit more about the meaning of a culture of health?
Happy to, Katie. So let me start by way of giving some history. Where in 2012, the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation celebrated its 40th anniversary. And that gave the foundation an opportunity to look back on where it's been and what it's been most proud of, including, for instance, helping to start the 911 system in this country, or helping to build the field of home visiting, or helping to address tobacco control and reduce smoking in this country. It also gave us an opportunity to be able to look ahead to where we felt we needed to be as a country if we were truly going to put health and opportunity within everyone's reach. That gave us an opportunity to recommit to equity and the need for equity and not only to talk about disparities. And it helped us identify that truly what we felt we needed in this country was a culture change, a culture shift, one that no longer only focused on treating people who are sick, but of keeping people well. And we call that vision a culture of health, and it's probably more accurate to call it cultures of wellness, recognizing that health means different things to different people. And for us, we are talking about a broad definition of health, whether that's physical or emotional or mental or other forms of well-being, and also recognizing that it was going to take more than around individual responsibility, but around collective responsibility for helping to create this healthier, more equitable nation. And so we have talked about a culture of health in a variety of ways. You may have seen, for instance, we have a culture of health action framework, which helps to highlight, for instance, the importance of shared values around health, around the need for multi-sector collaboration, the need for transforming our health and healthcare and social service systems, and the need for creating healthier and more equitable communities. We recognize that the culture of health is a vision. It is not meant to be prescriptive, and it is meant to understand how might we as a nation become one in which we can realize our promise of justice and fairness for all. And that means creating opportunities to achieve better health. Recognizing the history of this country, for instance, one that is built on structural racism, has made it impossible for that opportunity to be there or to create the kind of outcomes in health that are more fair and more just. And so it is really in that recognition through the prize that in many ways that vision was coming to life in different ways in different communities who are facing different kinds of strengths and different kinds of challenges. And so the prize was a way to help lift up how might a culture of health look and in what kinds of ways is it demonstrating the policies changes, the measurement, the definitions, the inclusion that were happening on the ground to make that culture change possible.
Great. Thank you, Katie.
Thank you, Katie.
So this next question is around a budget item. Other RWJF opportunities have limited overhead or administrative costs and have limited that to 10% of the budget. Will a similar limit be applied with this opportunity?
Thank you, Katie. The structure of a contract, which is how we would be managing this proposal moving forward, does not allow itself to apply indirect costs to the budget. So the percentage does not really come into play. Since this is going to be a contract.
Great. Thank you, Chris.
You're welcome.
So the next question is around a clarification question. And the question is, how many projects will be awarded? How competitive is this application? Is only one chosen, or could more potentially 8 to 10 be chosen?
Only one award will be given to the to be the new lead for this program. That doesn't mean that you might not have other partners that you're subcontracting with, but it is one award for one lead entity.
The next question is around utilizing RWJF's websites and portals, and is it required to use RWJF's websites and portals for releasing or receiving applications? And I believe this is referencing how the communities would be submitting applications to this entity.
If there is a portal that you would rather use, we would like to know that in your application. We are still determining what might be required or not, and knowing what portal you would or process you would prefer to use is part of us wanting to understand how you understand the selection process.
Great. Thank you, Katie. Chris, we actually have a follow-up question. So to your answer, and if this is a contract, not a grant, should hourly or daily rates include any administrative costs?
Yes, what we typically find when we provide a contract is that the people that we are supporting are usually providing us with what we call a loaded daily rate, and that does include administrative costs. However, if you are an organization and not per se a contractor, you can actually provide us with your base salary and just break it out in an hourly wage rate so that we can see what we will be supporting you. And in that case, there may be some indirect costs. And I say may be because I just wrote to my senior management to confirm that, because I've seen it in the past and I'm not sure how it exactly applies to this particular RFP. So I would appreciate if you could allow me to get back to you on that particular question so that no one else has any confusion around indirect costs and if and when you can apply them to your application.
Great. So we will follow up with the frequently asked questions document with more information. So thank you all for that time. So recognizing that this isn't something that we could easily predict, thank you very much for that recognition, but do we have a sense of how many proposals we anticipate receiving for this opportunity?
We do not know how to predict that. I wish that it was more straightforward than that. What I will say is that there were over 250 people registered for today's webinar, in case that gives you some level of understanding around demand or interest.
Great. So we have touched on a number of these topics. There has been a lot of information shared with all of you, and we greatly appreciate it. One question just came in, Katie. How many submissions for the prize do we receive each year?
For the prize itself, where communities are submitting their applications to be considered a prize winner, it's on average around 200. From prize winners themselves, or I should say from applications wanting to be considered a prize-winning community. And those prizes that we award to those communities are prizes. They are not grants from the foundation, and we do not have reporting requirements of those communities who receive a prize, those 44 communities that you saw on the map at the beginning of our webinar today.
Great. And Katie, I'm actually going to, this will be the last question of today's webinar. So are there any key components to keep in mind while the applicants are putting their applications and proposals together?
I'm assuming this is in reference to key components of the prize itself.
Yes.
So I will, again, reference back to the important characteristics of the prize that we shared earlier in the webinar that you will have for later reference, which is that this is a national recognition prize for work that is already accomplished, that it is intended to honor whole communities, that is, those that are geographically defined jurisdictions, and it seeks to showcase what is possible to inspire others to apply the principles exemplified in the prize criteria and to contribute to a broader narrative about and demand for how we as a nation can create a culture of health for all. And prize winners are expected to be announced annually.
Great. And with that, I want to thank you all for joining us today. please remember to download the full call for proposals and the frequently asked questions documents on the foundation's website at www.rwjf.org/CFP/prize-lead. And there is a link there. And if you have any questions about the application process, you can reach us via email at COHPRIZE@rwjf.org. That's Culture of Health Prize at rwjf.org. Thank you so much again, and please take good care. Have a wonderful day.